everybody, and welcome to True Stories of Tinseltown. And today we are on, I believe, our fourth blonde bombshell, aren't we? Yep, and with April Vivier, by the way, if you don't remember, she is, of course, a classic Hollywood historian and expert on blonde bombshells and classic blondes. And we are, right? We did.
We're on our fifth.
Wow. Time flies. Yes, we're on a wonderful one for you guys today who both of us love. And this is funny. This is April's first celebrity bio she read. And it is Lana Turner. What a gal. Hi, April. How you doing?
I'm doing well, Grace. How are you?
I am swell. It's so funny. I'm such a baby. I get the vape. My friend calls it the vapors, like Southern ladies who faint. But it's hot here, and I can't. It's like I could open the windows here. It's like a porch thing, but I would faint. And then the air conditioner's in the living room, but I mean, my God, the living room, it's not doing anything. So I'm just hot, but I'm glad to be here. And if I faint, everybody, I usually get revived pretty quickly.
That's comforting, Grace.
I know. Oh, dear. So we are going to talk about our girl, Lana. And why don't you just start us off with where our girl, Lana, is from and how did she get to Hollywood, USA?
All right. So Lana was born February 8th, 1921. Her birth name was Julia Jean Turner. She was actually born in Wallace, Idaho, which is a very small town up in like the Idaho panhandle. Her parents were John Virgil Turner and Mildred Frances Cohen. And she would actually end up being their only child. Lana was raised actually in pretty extreme poverty. Her dad was constantly jumping from job to job, and her mom, you know, was basically trying to keep up with the dad. What ended up happening was in 1927, the Turners decided to move to San Francisco. Unfortunately, by that point, John's marriage with Mildred was, you know, pretty much kaput, and they separated soon after. Mildred took a job as a beautician, and she would work up to 80 hours a week. On December 14th, 1930, John was found bludgeoned to death. John had won a crap game and had put his winnings in his left sock. And when his body was found, his shoe and the sock from his left foot, along with all of the money, was gone.
That's so heartbreaking. You know,
it is.
Did he also drink? Was he also a drinker? And he like spilled the guts that, yeah, I put my winnings in my shoe.
He would drink and gamble. Yeah. Kind of the drifter type, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Hobo-esque.
Understandably, though, Lana was pretty devastated by this. Some people have theorized that this, you know, influenced the rest of her life, especially her love life.
Yes.
But, you know, they had to obviously keep moving on. You know, her mom kept working 80 hours a week. Lana was, you know, placed basically in like a foster care system of her mom's acquaintances, not unlike Marilyn, actually. Some people really mistreated Lana. She would remember that one family basically treated her as a slave, but others.
The scholarly girl, yeah, she said that.
Yeah, so, you know, Lana for a short time lived with a Catholic family, and in 1928, she actually converted to Catholicism while, you know, Mildred was a Protestant, but Lana made it work. By 1936, Lana and Mildred had, you know, had their fair share of San Francisco. And for Mildred's health, it was recommended they move to a drier climate. And so in 1936, Lana and Mildred moved to Los Angeles.
I want to stop you just right here for a moment. And this, I believe this is true, but you can tell me if it isn't. They never, ever found who murdered Lana's dad, right?
They didn't. Her father's death is still unsolved to this day.
How sad. Okay, so back to the girls.
Yes. No. So they moved to Los Angeles. Juana is, at this point, she's still Julia, obviously, mm-hmm. but Juana is promptly enrolled into Hollywood High School. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kind of a mediocre student by all accounts, nothing really special, but of course she's absolutely gorgeous. And in 1937, Juana decides to skip a typing class and go to the Top Hat Malt Shop, you know, instead of going to class, where she is quickly spotted by William Wilkerson, who was a reporter for the Hollywood Reporter. Now, there's a very common story that she was discovered in Schwab's.
Yes.
She obviously was not discovered in Schwab's, but Sidney Skolsky, who was a famous columnist back then, ran a story about, you know, the rise of Juana Turner, and he incorrectly said that the malt shop where she was discovered was Schwab's, and that led to hundreds of wannabe starlets parting their butts at Schwab's every day, hoping that they would be spotted, but of course it was actually the Top Hat Malt Shop. Famously, when William Wilkerson approached her, he said, "Do you want to be an actress?" And she said, "I have to go home and ask my mother."
Isn't that refreshing? Because all we've been talking about with these women mostly is these horrible stage mothers. And from all accounts, Mildred does not seem like one at all.
No, Mildred wasn't like that at all. She Juana was always very close to her mother. Her mother lived up until, you know, the 80s. She absolutely adored her mother. And, you know, Mildred was just supportive of Juana with whatever she wanted to do. And she gave Juana her blessing. You know, Juana got in contact with Wilkerson. He had given her her card, and he introduced her to Zeppo Marx. Of course, that is Groucho's brother. Mm-hmm. But Zeppo actually had kind of a side hustle where he was a talent agent. Zeppo recognized that, you know, this girl could do really well, and he introduced her to Mervyn LeRoy. Now, Mervyn worked for Warner Brothers, and this is actually when Juana got her name changed. Mervyn said that Julia Jean did not sound like a star name, so Juana and him were thinking, and all of a sudden Juana popped out and said, "How about Juana? Juana Turner." Of course, the rest is history.
It's a great name.
It is. It rolls off the tongue, and you can just see it in lights, can't you?
Yes, you can. And when I was 17, I lied and said my name was Juana once. I looked older, and I was at a bar, and somebody asked me my name, and I said Juana. And it was with my best friend, and what did she say? Her name was Gina, but she gave some other name. And he said, he was playing some cheesy Howard Johnson's, you know, it was my hometown. But Juana, he didn't buy it. I'm sorry, you guys. It just reminded me of that.
Hey, you could definitely pass for Juana, Grace.
Not then.
LeRoy actually became kind of, you know, like Juana's, I don't want to say Svengali, but he, you know, definitely helped Juana. And he got her on with Warner Brothers for $50 a week. Her first film was entitled They Won't Forget, and it has a very famous walk. Juana actually ends up murdered in the picture.
This is a good movie. Horrible, but good.
It really is. I'm not spoiling it by giving her fate. It's a very brief role.
Right. But, and she does get murdered.
She does. But Juana, you know, saw herself on screen, and she said she was aware that she had a body, but she had never seen it before like that. And as she watched herself walk, she would just squirm lower and lower into her seat.
There was a great scene from that. I cut that out and I posted it on my page. Of Juana, where she got the sweater girl, because she was this adorable girl wearing her beret and just bouncing around, just not trying to be bouncing, but it's such a great little clip to show how Juana actually became the sweater girl from that movie.
It is amazing. And then, of course, as you've brought up, Grace, she received the name of the sweater girl, which Juana absolutely could not stand. You know, Juana didn't really see herself as being a sex symbol at, you know, 16 years old, which is, you know, pretty understandable. But, of course, that's what she was called. It became her nickname. I would say the rest is history, but, of course, we're going into that. Mm-hmm. In late 1937, Leroy moved over to MGM Studios, and he asked In late 1937, Leroy moved to MGM, and he asked Jack Warner if he could take Lana with him. Jack readily agreed because he thought that Lana would, you know, end up being a nobody. He didn't see where she had any potential. MGM signed her for $100 a week, and of course, she would remain with MGM for the next 18 years. Lana's first movie with MGM was Love Finds Andy Hardy, which was released in 1938. And that, of course, had the wonderful pairing of Mickey Rooney and Judy Garland. Lana became known as, like, the kissing girl from the film and everything. But, you know, it really showed that she had a knack for comedy. And during this time, she also finished high school. She was, you know, one of the child stars who went to the MGM school. And she was right there in class next to Judy Garland.
Yeah, and didn't she date Jackie, not the one, Cooper? And, you know, Jane Powell and all those guys were there. But she became good friends with Judy, right?
She did. And she was absolutely devastated when Judy died. Hmm. She couldn't really, you know, handle it. That was someone she had grown up with. And, you know, it's pretty understandable. At this point, you know, 17-year-old Lana is making quite a splash. And she starts going out with attorney Greg Boutzer. Most people know him because of his relationship with Joan Crawford, but he actually had a pretty steady thing going on with Lana. Once she became 18, it became a little more serious, and she actually planned on the two of them getting married.
But she had no idea about Joan, and Joan had no idea about Lana, because Greg was a player. And if you also see, they kind of mixed him into one person. I saw Mommy Dearest, what a riot. I saw that a couple weeks ago, and they made Greg Boutzer kind of a couple of Joan's husbands. But they didn't know about each other, did they?
They didn't, but of course, Joan had, you know, spies everywhere, and she quickly found out about Lana. And Joan called Lana up one day and basically told her she needed to lay off Greg because she was going to marry him. At this point, Lana did have a Star Sapphire engagement from Greg, and I think she was pretty flabbergasted. I mean, she talks about that in her autobiography. But she didn't heed the warning of Joan, and she kept on seeing Greg, which was, you know, a huge thing. Obviously, Joan was extremely famous at this time, and, you know, she had a relationship with Greg that went back many years. But Greg was, you know, reportedly pretty infatuated with Lana, but he really wasn't prepared to, you know, settle down.
Did he ever? I know he dated a lot of women. I should check that out, because I was never sure if he ever actually did settle down.
He did when he was a little bit older, but I mean, when I say quite a bit older. But, you know, eventually Lana got sick of waiting, and in February 13th, 1940, she ran off and she married Artie Shaw. And of course, Artie Shaw really made the rounds.
Yeah.
But Artie had been her co-star in Dancing Co-Ed, because, you know, at this point, she's still doing these really lighthearted co-ed movies. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Lana would remember her marriage with Artie as being her college education. He was supposedly very condescending to her. He, you know, considered himself to be a great intellect, and he would play mind games with Lana. It just wasn't a happy relationship.
No, and he wanted her to be a hausfrau, she said. It's like, you marry these glamorous women, what in the world? And then he condescends to them, making them read books. He did the same thing with Ava. And the funny thing is that she was so close. She was very close friends with Judy. Judy was shocked because she thought she was seeing Artie Shaw. And Betty Grable was shocked because she thought she was seeing Artie Shaw. And next thing you know, Lana's married to him.
Exactly. And we talked about that last week. Mm-hmm. Betty did not take the news of Artie getting married to Lana very well. Betty, I guess, though, really didn't have to worry too much because 4 months later, Lana decided their marriage was kaput. Unfortunately, during this time, Lana also discovered she was pregnant, and Artie denied that he was the baby's father.
She's a charmer.
He was a very interesting person. Yes. Lana ended up getting an abortion, and, Artie really had no objections to it. He just was not cut out for fatherhood, I guess, in his mind with, what, an 18-year-old Lana Turner, 19-year-old Lana Turner. But she gets her abortion. She's looking to separate him. They're dividing everything up, and Lana's mother had given the couple a baby grand piano, which Artie demanded he be able to keep. And so in retaliation, Lana takes one of his clarinets.
I thought Mildred was, her mom was actually quite attractive in her younger days, too.
She was. She was a very, very pretty woman. She, if she had only been born, around the time that Lana was, we might also be talking about Mildred having a screen career. But Lana kept on working, and one of the things I want to bring up is, Lana, yes, she was married, 8 different times to 7 different men, but Lana actually kept some gaps in between her marriages. I mean, she enjoyed the single life. 1941, Lana is famously in Ziegfeld Girl.
I love her in that. That's a great movie.
It is. And she actually credits that film with giving her an interest in acting. She, saw the beautiful sets, the costuming. She had a great script. And she's like, well, this is what acting should be about. Not, these lighthearted co-ed features I'm constantly doing. The film was a success, obviously in part because of Lana, and so MGM gave Lana a raise to $1,500 a week as well as her own trailer.
I gotta stop you here, Alex. Just a minute, April. Just when did she dye her hair blonde? Was that for that, or was it for something prior to that? Because they said she really came alive and she really got noticed when she became a blonde.
She had actually dyed her hair a little bit before that, because pictures of her with Artie show her as being a blonde. Mm-hmm. So she would have probably dyed her hair, I would say, around, probably 39-ish. 38, 39-ish, somewhere in there. But like everything, it's kind of a gradual process. Mm-hmm. So she kind of goes, and she's hanging out as a brownette for quite a while. But so she does that. She, discovers, hey, I'm a pretty, I like acting. MGM recognizes it. 1941 is also notable for Lana's career because she makes Honky Tonk with Clark Gable, which will be their first of 4 pictures together. There are rumors that she and Clark may have been more than friends. Maybe not started on the set of Honky Tonk. Maybe it was. Again, there's some disagreements on that. But in 1942, she makes Somewhere I'll Find You with Clark Gable. And, of course, Carol Lombard is killed during filming. Now, there are a lot of people who say that news got back to Carol that Clark was cheating on her with Lana, and that she quick rushed back because she wanted to, make sure Clark wasn't stepping out on her. Lana always denied this affair, but even if it had happened, I don't think she would admit to it.
Definitely not. It would have made her look really bad.
And also, it would.
And in I'm reading, I think in Lana's book as well, that Carol came in dressed to kill in Honky Tonk when they had a love scene. and, you know, was staring at Lana, and Lana ran into her dressing room and wouldn't come out until Carol left.
Lana tended to do that quite a bit. She also did that with Barbara Stanwyck.
Oh, my God. I read that, too. Oh, boy.
You know, the whole Clark Gable thing, you know, it's one of those things. I'm not saying she did if she didn't. If she did, I mean, she's 21 years old. Yes. He's the biggest star in the world, you know, and at the end of the day, Clark was the one who was married.
Exactly. So but I don't blame her for, you know, denying it wholeheartedly, because Cheryl did two books. One was Detour, and then I was just reading. I have a beautiful picture book and one that Cheryl did with someone else about Lana, and she pretty much says my mother denied it, that they ever had anything. But, you know, I would too, you know, because unfortunately people are mean, and they would have really torn her apart, and that wouldn't have been good.
They would have, and, you know, obviously Lombard ends up dead in the story, you know, and no one wants to feel like they are responsible for somebody else's death.
I think Clark felt he was.
Yeah, Clark, obviously, I know we're going off a little bit, but Clark, you know, was absolutely devastated, and Carol had been telling him that he should join the military. He said no. He actually went and joined because of, you know, like in Carol's memory. Very depressing story. And like I said, you know, supposedly Carol was supposed to go back by train, but she wanted to go back by plane because obviously air travel was much faster than train. And of course the plane crashed actually not too far from me, about 2 hours south of me.
Awful. It's because, and the mother believed in numerology, and the guy, the publicist who went with them, they're saying, no, Carol, we don't want to go. There's no room for us on the plane. They kick guys off. Did you ever read Fireball?
I did. It is a very, very good book. I highly recommend it.
Yes. I'm going to see if I can get the author on this, because it's a fascinating book. And literally, you know, these guys have their lives because Carol had their butts kicked off off the flight. But yeah, the mother didn't want to fly. He didn't want to fly. And she wanted to fly. So, boom.
Yeah, no, it's
so tragic.
But, you know, regardless of what happened, Lana has, you know, denied it up until she died. So we're never going to know. But like I said, instead of placing the blame on Lana's door, like a lot of people do, you know, a lot more should be placed on Clark. But anyway, Lana throws herself into, you know, the Bond tours that are going around. She agreed to do a 10-week Bond tour in 42. And one of her gimmicks with it was Bonds for Kisses. One man actually paid $50,000
to kiss
Lana Turner. Now, of course, this is in $1942.
Did he get tongue?
I'd assume not. Yuck. I'm sure it was just a pack. Another guy paid her, you know, $5,000 to get two kisses, yikes, one on each cheek. But, you know, Lana did a lot for, you know, World War II, and that really should be, you know, the focus of her time, you know, during that era. But in 1942, that was a really big year for Lana. She met Stephen Crane. Stephen Crane obviously would become the father of her only child, Cheryl Crane. And Stephen Crane is a very interesting figure. He had a story about himself, not unlike Mike Romanoff when it came to, you know, redoing life stories, that he was, you know, a tobacco heir and he came from a lot of money. And of course, he really didn't. He came from a small town, and I want to say it's Indiana, you know, family really didn't have, you know, the pot to piss in.
Didn't they work in a tobacco factory or something, or they grew?
Yeah, his dad.
So it wasn't really that big a big, it was a huge lie, but there was a little ounce of truth.
There is, and they also had a general store that sold tobacco, so that's what it is. But they really don't have a whole lot. But Lana doesn't know this. He's not honest with her. So on July 17th, 1942, after only a couple weeks of dating, she married Stephen Crane. And for those keeping track of Lana's marriages, this is only her second one.
Yes, numero dos. How old was Lana at this point? 20, 21?
She would have been 21. So, and Stephen's birthday was only the day before Lana's. So he would have been, let's see, like 26. So they get married. And then Lana finds out that Stephen is actually still married to a different woman. Lana is completely horrified because she's, you know, going to be charged as a bigamist, or, well, he's going to be charged as a bigamist, but she's going to be, you know, the wife of the bigamist.
Implicated in this humongous scandal as she's just, you know, becoming this huge movie star.
She is, you know, and one of her main concerns is actually that Louis B. Mayer is going to faint when he finds out. She's beside herself at this point. But, you know, so they end up separating probably around October or November. But then Lana discovers that she is pregnant. So in March 1943, they get remarried again because, you know, Stephen's divorce is finally final. July 25th of 1943, she gives birth to Cheryl. And she doesn't really have a whole lot of, you know, pushback from it. You know, obviously her kid's born only a few months after she's married, but she doesn't receive a lot of flack for that because, of course, everyone was following the saga of Stephen Crane and Lana Turner. In 1943, that also marked where she has a dramatic shift in her career. She films the film Slightly Dangerous, and it, you know, puts her into dramatic roles. Before this, she's kind of in, you know, either really glamorous parts or these, you know, bubbly blonde comedies. But 43 really sees where people are like, oh, you know, Lana Turner is a semi-decent dramatic actress.
She's Slightly Dangerous. Who'd she star in that with? Because I don't think I've ever seen that film.
Oh, goodness. I can't even begin to tell you her co-star. I should know it off the top of my head.
No, you don't have to. Is that when Johnny Eager starts as well?
Yeah, no, she, this is really going to bug me now. Now I'm going to have to find it. But, you know, she does it. Critics are raving over her. They're saying, you know, oh, you know, she was super great in this film. And the public really takes to a dramatic Lana Turner. It's quite shocking because as we talk about these blondes, we're going to see that a lot of them, you know, don't really like transfer over genres well. But Lana's able to do it and do it quite well. And she's still really young. You know, she's not having to do these roles because she's older. 1943 also saw where Lana went to Stephen Crane's hometown. And she is completely flabbergasted because this is where she finds out he's not a tobacco heir.
That is a liar, liar, pants on fire.
Yeah, and like you said, he had never told her. She is just absolutely flabbergasted. And it really puts a strain on their marriage. And then the following year, they get divorced. And a lot of that is because of her trip back to his hometown. You know, he's parading her around like, look, I married a movie star. And she's like, you know, what the hell? I thought you were a tobacco heir, and I'm discovering that your family has a general store.
Isn't that very weird, though? Why would he do that? I mean, he knows he's a big fat liar. Why would he take, her back?
I think a lot of it was, honestly, he thought, well, we're in love, so she's going to be able to look over this. But, you know, Lana's personality was very black and white. Mm-hmm. You know, you were either good or you were bad. And the moment you did something bad, she would just close the door on you and it wasn't getting reopened. You know, and so Stephen, of course, to her becomes very bad because he lied. And you know, I think he looked out like, oh, you know, we can get over this. But she obviously wasn't having any of that.
But she had no forewarning either before they went, right? He didn't say, hey, by the way, Lana, I kind of like
no, she lied a little bit here.
Yeah,
exactly what, you know, his past was. And she's just completely flabbergasted. So, you know, next year they get divorced. You know, Lana obviously keeps working. In 1946, she makes probably her most famous movie, The Postman Always Rings Twice. this, you know, is obviously a noir classic. Highly recommended.
Love it.
Someone hasn't seen it.
John Garfield and her are dynamite. Fabulous together.
They are. She probably has one of the most famous, you know, film entries ever put on film. Yes. Her, you know, scene entrance is just amazing. She's wearing, you know, her white turban and her white, you know, shorts and her top. And it's just.
And
it's
her really white heels. And basically, she drops her lipstick and Garfield's eyes are going all the way up from her feet to her tan gams to her white outfit to her turban, saying, hey, doesn't look too bad for me to stay here.
It's amazing. And, of course, the movie is extremely successful. People absolutely love it. You know, people can't get enough of Lana Turner. And in this movie, you can see why. 46 also marks where she goes down to Argentina. Ava really enjoyed Latin culture, you know, from Latin America and, you know, into South America and even in Spain. And she, you know, this is probably one of my favorite Lana stories. She's going through customs and she is stopped and then she is there for hours. And reportedly, according to Lana, all of her things had been unpacked and photographed, her jewelry and her clothes, so that the president's wife, Ava Perón, could have copies of everything made because she absolutely loves Lana.
Yes, I read that. I didn't know that part, but I read that. Ava Perón was totally obsessed with Lana.
It's a really great story. So whether or not it happened exactly, that's up for debate. But you know what? I love it, and I'm going to pretend that it happened.
I think it's great. And also that, didn't they, well, I read somewhere that they met, and she wanted the same exact hair color as Lana, and yet it turned a different color. And Lana's hairdresser sent her the right combo on how to color her hair to get the Lana blonde. That's another thing I read. Allegedly.
You can see where I've never seen exact copies of Ava Perón, you know, wearing exact copies of Lana Turner's clothing. I'm sure one of your viewers, if they have, you know, seen it, they can tell us about it. But she definitely does copy a lot of Lana's, you know, hairstyles. Lana would do these super intricate, you know, updos and everything. And of course, Ava's wearing them too. But and you are right, they supposedly did meet once, and Lana was completely uncomfortable because Ava would sit there and would just stare at her the entire time. Of course, Ava died quite tragically in, you know, 53, but
she was only 33 years old. She died of cancer, right?
Yes, and there's a bunch of stuff. A lot of it's not true, what you hear about her body. We won't go into that. But it was a horrible experience. But putting Ava Perón aside, in 1947, Lana makes Green Dolphin Street, which is a period piece. She is actually a brunette in the movie. Highly recommend that one, too.
Yeah, I like that. Donna Reed is very good in that, too, when she plays. It's a good movie. It's so sad, you know, because it's so weird. John Hodiak is also in that, isn't he? Is that he's the guy that plays the big cheese?
Yeah, no, it's just a really good movie.
I like it a lot.
I really enjoy it. But you know, while she's filming Green Dolphin Street, she meets the man who is supposedly the love of her life, and that is Tyrone Power. Now, Tyrone Power is obviously the heartthrob of the 1940s.
And he was absolutely beautiful.
He really was. And, you know, she absolutely adored Tyrone. Studio wasn't so hot on them getting together, but she absolutely adored the man.
Was he still married? I'm sorry. Was he still married at the time and getting a divorce? Or I thought it was something like that, that he wasn't totally free. Yeah.
Yeah, no, Tyrone was just getting divorced, I believe, if I remember correctly. He was just getting divorced, but of course, he goes off, and they date on and off for years, but Lana always just said that Tyrone was the love of her life, and then she actually fell pregnant by Tyrone, but she went, she had another abortion. And that was in the fall of 47. And there's a really great interview with Lana from 82 on the Phil Donahue show. And she's very open about that now. She really, you know, regretted that aspect, you know, of her life. She wished more than anything that she would have kept the baby. But, you know, she really couldn't because of the time period.
And he didn't want it. What I read, and I don't know if this is true, but that, you know, he all of a sudden decided he wanted to take a flying jaunt across the world or something. So he's leaving Lana and she's pregnant, and she was supposed to give code as to whether if she was going to have the abortion or not.
Yes, the thing of I found the house or I didn't find the house.
Right, and something weird.
Not the abortion. It was going to be I found the house, and that's what she talks about in the Phil Donahue interview. Mm. She sent a telegram that said I found the house. Of course, he comes back and he's married to Linda Christensen.
Yeah, while he's on the road, he picks this chick up, and poor Lana's devastated.
Exactly. And there's debates about, you know, his tour around the world. Did the studio make him go? Most likely he chose to go probably to get some space and figure out what he wanted to do. But there are reports the studio put Linda, you know, within his grasp. Of course, they got married and that was a whole nother thing. But, you know, Lana keeps on going. And in 1948, Lana finally appears in Technicolor. It's pretty amazing when you think about that she had been working on screen at this point for 11 years, but we never saw her in color until The Three Musketeers.
She plays a bad girl.
She does. She plays Dewberry. It's a very complicated movie. I like it. Critics were kind of mixed on it, but it's Lana in color. I mean, it doesn't get much better than that.
Yeah. She said she enjoyed working with Vincent Price the most on that film.
Yeah. Vincent Price was apparently a really great co-star. People absolutely adored working with him.
And he's bright. He was witty, you know, just a good dude.
Exactly. On April 26, 1948, Bob Topping becomes Lana's third husband. Bob Topping was a millionaire, and Lana was very honest with him when he proposed, which he proposed by dropping a 15-carat diamond in her martini glass.
Can you imagine?
If that's not, right?
If it's that's a not so movie.
Way,
it's right? So movie.
But, you know, that's how he proposes to her. Lana's very honest with him, and she says, I don't love you. You know, but, you know, we'll see what happens. And he's like, oh, no, it's OK. You'll learn to love me. You'll grow to love me. And, you know, they get married. They end up going on a honeymoon that lasts over a year.
And where is Cheryl at this point?
Cheryl had gone with them for part of it, as well as Mildred. They had left. They went to England. They, you know, went through the French Riviera, and that is where Cheryl and Mildred meet up with them, is in the Riviera. They stay for a few weeks, and then Mildred takes Cheryl back home, and Lana and Bob just keep traveling. Lana, unfortunately, during this time, ends up having a stillborn baby boy. And that is why their honeymoon lasted for 13 months.
Wow.
Because she, you know, she had a stillborn, and then he took her away for another, you know, 5 months.
Well, she was Rh negative, which is a really rare blood type. Mm-hmm. So it was hard for her. That my mom had the same thing happen to her with a stillborn. She was Rh negative, and she basically had to have a whole blood transfusion through that. And I think that happened to Lana. And along with Cheryl, too, I think when Cheryl was born.
It did. Cheryl almost died. Lana almost died as well when she had Cheryl. But Lana wanted to keep having children, and mm-hmm. she wanted to keep trying. And but, you know, obviously that wasn't in the cards. Lana famously said, you know, when I was growing up, I wanted to have 7 children and 1 husband. And instead, I had 7 husbands and 1 child.
That's so sad, isn't it?
It is. It's really depressing. And that's a big thing with Lana. You know, Lana receives a lot of hate. And I think a lot of it is because of her love life. And it's very complicated. It's very, you know, jumps around quite a bit, but Lana had a very tragic life.
I love Lana. I don't know. I never got a lot of hate from her, you know, when I post things or do something like that.
Yeah, no, I see a lot more of it, like, on Twitter and stuff like that. Like, on social media, a lot of people just don't like Lana, but I absolutely love Lana.
Me too.
And I think she was a decent actress.
She was. She was not great, but she was certainly...
She had her spot.
She could sell it. You know, she could sell it.
Yeah.
So she's married to this dude. I just want to talk about this one movie, maybe two, Mr. Imperium. She hated that guy who she starred with. Right? Enzo, what's his name? Enzo Pinza or something?
Oh, goodness, Grace, you're better with names than I am.
Let me look at this dude's name. Okay. I think he had, like, garlic breath, and he thought he was so handsome and everything. And he drew. I say Ezio Pinza? Ezio Pinza? She hated him. I think that was her worst. But did you ever see the movie A Life of Her Own? It's 1950, and it's with... Ray Milland is her co-star, and Anne Dvorak, who is a very big pre-code actress, mm-hmm. is kind of making a comeback in this. And Lana plays this girl from a town who's kind of been there, done that. All the fellas know her and stuff, and she's moving to New York. And it's just very you got to see it if you haven't seen it. And she falls in love with Ray Milland. And this is a plot device that I've noticed. I want to talk about this in a podcast one time. A plot device. He's married to this person. He falls in love with Lana. But the reason he can't leave Lana is because his wife is crippled. And not only is she crippled, she's crippled because he was driving the car. So hence, alter guilt, he can't leave his wife.
I have not seen that, but it sounds very good.
You've got to see it. And Lana's like at the top, you know, she's 5'2". She becomes this big top model. Her friend commits suicide. It's a really dark, but a good movie. It's really...
No, it sounds like it. No, that's definitely one for the watch.
Check it out. You will like it a lot. So she, at this point, she's over Tyrone, and she's with Mr. Rich Boy.
Yes, she's with Bob. She gets pregnant again. She has another stillborn child. And, you know, I'm not trying to trivialize this with how I'm talking about. These were obviously extremely devastating for both Bob and Lana, and their marriage just cannot survive it. So in 1952, Bob and Lana get divorced.
Also, she didn't like the life of the idle rich, right? She said it was, like, boring.
She didn't. She thought they were lazy and wasting their youth. She just could not understand
it. I agree. Can you imagine just hanging around? You know, it'd be nice to have the moolah, but, you know, just to be so yuck. I couldn't imagine.
I mean, we could spend so much more of our time dedicated to old Hollywood, though.
I know. Oh, my gosh.
But I guess for that would be working.
Yeah.
But, you know, anyway. So Lana, you know, sits there. She divorces, you know, Bob, and, you know, she keeps on chugging. And relatively quickly, in September of 1953, she marries Lex Barker.
Who is incredibly handsome.
He is. That man was basically a walking god. You can see why she loved him so much. Just for his appearance.
Did you read the article where she was getting interviewed and there was like a picture or something in his way? And she said, oh, wait a minute. I want to move that. He's new, you know, because she was just like ogling him that he was such a hunk. Because he was a hunk. He was very handsome.
He was a... It's a very complicated thing. We'll quick go back to Lana's career for a minute, and then we'll jump back into her stuff with Lex. So in 56, Lana is finally let go from MGM. She had been with them since late 37. And Lana actually takes it in stride. She's very actually, you know, at least on the outside to, you know, reporters. She sits there and she says, I am finally free. You know, she looks out like she can do what she wants. And with Lana's career in her hands, she does do well. But we'll go back. On July 22nd, 1957, Lana is granted her divorce from Lex Barker. Now, Grace, I'm sure you would like to inform everyone as to why they got divorced.
Well, this is an awful story, but allegedly, Lex had been sexually molesting Cheryl since she was, how old, 10 and a half?
Mm-hmm.
Till she was, what, 13 or 14?
Yep.
And she finally told, did she tell Lana or did she tell somebody else?
She told Mildred.
Aha.
And Mildred told Lana. And Lana was absolutely devastated. She had had another stillborn child with Lex. It had been a little girl. She had hoped that they would, you know, be able to be a family. And Lana, you know, hears about it, obviously finds out, and she pulls out a gun, and Lex is sleeping next to her, and she holds it to his head.
Good for her.
He doesn't wake up. And she, you know, she was going to pull the trigger, and she, you know, was thinking about it, and she said to herself, this guy isn't worth it. You know, I'm going to completely wreck my life and, you know, Cheryl's life if I do this. And so Lana orders him out of the house, and he, Lex says, whatever your daughter told you is a lie. And of course, Lana hadn't mentioned anything with Cheryl. So, you know, we could take that how we will, I suppose. But, you know, she quickly got rid of Lex. Gorgeous man, horrible person.
Yes. And you know what was funny? How they met? It was like she was, Lex was married to Arlene Dahl, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Lorenzo Lamas was I don't know. It was this whole thing. Like Arlene Dahl, Lex, Lana had this huge affair with Fernando Lamas, and it was like a, you know, kind of a slug him out kind of thing where he would beat her up and they would get drunk and do that kind of thing. And I read in Esther Williams' book, because she ends up marrying Fernando Lamas, that she's, and I see a picture of them, they're at dinner. It's Fernando, Lana, and Esther Osolo Mia with nobody, and they had the rooms next door. And she said she put a cup next to the wall. This is from her own book, to listen to them having sex. Oh, Esther. Oh, Esther.
Yeah, no, her relationship with Lamas was very, complicated, I guess.
Tempestuous.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. It's very complicated. He actually gets fired for beating up Lana. Huge thing, but anyway, obviously it didn't work out. But you are right. Lamas was going with Lana. Arlene Dahl was obviously married to Lex. And basically Lana and Arlene switched partners. It's, you know, and then obviously he moved on to Esther. Huge thing. But, you know, she kind of finds herself in another mess. But before we get into that, Peyton Place actually started filming only a couple weeks after she filed for divorce from Lex.
The club with his pants falling down, or the dance that's a dream of romance, or the scene where the villain is me. Entertainment, the lights on the lady in tights or the bride.